Hello there, everybody, and welcome back to the Weekly POV. This is Josh, and I have a very, very special guest this week. Go ahead and tell us who you are, special guest.
Hey, my name's Adam.
Adam.
From a Certain Point of View podcast.
Awesome. Adam, it is so glad to have you back. Thank you.
It's great to be back.
For agreeing to do this with me today. I know you have been a very busy man as of late. Right. So
we tried a couple times here. This is the first time that it worked. Yeah. So
So we'll see how many.
It's been more way times too long since I have been able to do one of these.
It has been, but it's great that this is happening right now. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, me too. So
Adam, why don't you tell us what you've been up to lately and, you know, why you've been MIA all this time. And I might even have just, you know, if you're watching on YouTube, I might have a little visual aid for this part as well.
I've been doing the pastor thing. That has been keeping me quite busy. I started back in July. I remember I mentioned it on the audio podcast, but for any of the YouTubers out there, there I am.
There he is.
For any of the YouTubers out there, that's what I've been doing. I've been a pastor at my local church since July and doing two services a week now, and it's going well.
That's great to hear, buddy. I'm glad to hear you're enjoying your new gig right now and everything is going well. There's the page for your church is on Facebook. People can check out the sermons and everything.
Yeah, so we're actually in the middle of a total revamp of our website, and we're actually getting a phone app and all kinds of cool stuff coming soon too. So
nice.
So we'll have to keep an eye out on the church webpage and get that app for our phone, and we'll be doing some cool things here soon.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you for just letting us know what you've been up to. And I'm glad the people got to hear and see you in action there if they're watching on YouTube. So we're gonna talk a little bit today about something that I watched over the weekend, and Adam, I know you watched over the weekend, mm-hmm. and that was the Royal Rumble. So can you just give me your maybe overall initial thoughts about the Rumble? Just in general,
the whole show or just the,
just the whole thing in general, what do you feel about it?
Overall, I thought it was a really, really good show. And I'm sure we'll get to this, but one of the best Rumble endings maybe ever, mm-hmm. possibly one of the best, pay-per-view endings, at least in a long time, you know, not just limited to Rumble. That ending was pretty spectacular. Some really good moments through the rest of the show. Some, you know, kind of downer moments as well. I'd probably give this pay-per-view maybe like a 7 or 8 out of 10 overall.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. You know, I'll be honest, you know, I'm more of a, like, as far as any kind of wrestling goes, WWE is the only wrestling that I watch, and I usually just watch the pay-per-view. I know they're not really pay-per-view anymore, but
premium live events now, PLEs.
Premium, the premium live. There's another acronym for you.
Yep.
But yeah, I only watch the premium live events on Peacock, and I sort of keep up with Raw and SmackDown through like they have like this weekly mm-hmm. Update mm-hmm. thing on Peacock that you can look at too.
It's been pretty fun lately.
With
Triple H doing a lot more stuff behind the scenes now than he was, I think the quality of the shows have gotten better. Even SmackDown and Raw have both been better. This whole Bloodline story is one of the best stories they've done in at least a decade, I think. Maybe going back to like the Daniel Bryan Yes movement stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But and I'm sure we'll get back into this in just a bit, but that Bloodline is A+ storytelling.
Yeah, we are going to get back into that in just a minute here, but what were your thoughts specifically on the Rumble matches? Let's start with the men's Royal Rumble, and you know your pick to win, your thoughts on who the winner was, that type of thing.
Yeah, my pick to win, like, initially was Cody. You know, just all of his stated goals when he came back, and knowing that that was probably part of him coming back, is to have a title run. And then everything that happened with his pec, which is, by the way, one of the most memorable things I've ever seen in a match, that Hell in a Cell match.
Oh, yeah, that was just crazy.
Yeah, the fact that he did that with a torn pec is unbelievable. But anyway.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, so he was really my front runner to win. I had said that if someone came back to win, that it would probably be The Rock and do like a Rock and Bloodline feud, since they're all family. You know,
I did like that prediction when you told me about that the other
day.
That
was really more just a guess, because I mean, he has been flat out honest. It was like saying, I'm not going to be at WrestleMania. And, you know, people are like, yeah, are you really not going to be at WrestleMania? Or are you just,
saying
not? Yeah. But he was, you know, he was pretty honest. And then I think if he doesn't come back there, and I think it makes sense to not have him come back for that, because, I mean, if he's going to win, then he's going to have a belt. And is he going to really stick around for a belt title run? I don't think he will. He's a busy guy, you know?
Yeah. And maybe two belts for that matter. I mean,
yeah.
And speaking of that, how permanent do you think this two belts thing is going
to
be?
Not permanent. You know? I don't think. I think they have to separate it at some time. And I think they'll probably do that relatively soon. You know, I don't think that Cody's going to be undisputed champion. I think they'll probably split the belts at some point very soon.
So do you think this whole storyline with the Bloodline and Sami Zayn and everything, do you think this is going to be the thing that like splits up the Bloodline and maybe
I think it already has
Roman Reigns' reign?
Yeah. So yeah. I think it already has. What happened at the end with Jay leaving the ring, which I wasn't expecting. I mean, I knew the Sami stuff was going to come to a head, and I knew that Jay had been kind of falling in behind him lately, supporting him more through that story. And that's that whole thing has just been told so well.
Because,
you know, Jay starts off, you know, really not trusting this guy. And then at Survivor Series War Games, he kind of comes around, and then they're getting close and they're getting thick. And then it comes down to this stuff this past week with the trial, where Jay kind of steps in and saves Sami. You know, really, really well done storytelling. Really well done long form storytelling. Really amazing stuff, and also acted extremely well. You know, because this stuff kind of falls off if they don't act it right. And everybody in this story has been superb. You know,
yeah, it's very convincing and believable. I feel you know,
yep,
yeah.
So Jay leaving at the end of that, you know, really, I think kind of spells some trouble for the Bloodline. I think it's about over in the next few months. I think post Mania, I think the Bloodline will kind of wrap up.
Yeah, it'll be.
And I mean, it's been 2 years of this stuff, so and it's been a very good 2 years. I think the best two years of Roman Reigns' career, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I've always been a big fan of his. And especially with his real life, you know, struggles with
health and cancer,
cancer and everything. And, but yeah, so, and I too was for Cody Rhodes winning. I thought he would. Yeah. I was a little concerned that maybe it was too predictable for that to happen, but still happened. But
yeah, I read a lot of people saying that, and I don't think it's a problem if it's the right ending. And I think that was the right ending. Right. You know, I think that made sense emotionally. I think that made sense storytelling wise. And not only that, but they got Cody his win, but they also got Gunther a win of his own coming in at number one. And I love him and the work that he's been doing with Imperium and all the stuff that they're doing behind the Intercontinental title to make it important again. And having him in there from one until the end and taking over the record for the longest appearance in the 30-man Rumble, that's a win for him too, because he looks strong as heck coming out of that, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree. Overall, there weren't a whole lot of surprises with the men's Royal Rumble match, but one surprise, one thing that like shocked me was Booker T. I loved it.
And that was very good.
I've always been a I've always been a big Booker T fan, so yeah, seeing him yeah. come in and still be able to pull off all his moves,
Spin-a-Rooney was fun. Yeah,
yeah. yeah. So that was, you know, that was
the,
a highlight.
The surprise thing is kind of a double-edged sword, because I mean, if you have the surprises, that also kind of means that your roster isn't something you can lean on. Yeah. You know, and now I think that they have the roster where they can bring in and showcase some of the guys that they have currently that are on, you know, the main roster that need some of that airtime. Mm-hmm. And so having just one, I think Booker was a perfect one to come back, because he's been doing so much work with NXT. I think it makes sense to have him come back. And then I think it makes a lot of sense to show off people like Ricochet and Chad Gable and Street Profits and, you know, all these other really young and up and coming guys that are very promising, a Gargano and Imperium, you know, like I said, with Gunther. I think that means that they actually have a lot of talent, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, you know, they do have a lot of depth there. Moving over to the women's Royal Rumble, we had Rhea Ripley, who started at number one, and just like Gunther, made it clear to the end, mm-hmm. except she won in this scenario. So what did
first
you think?
Woman of, to do that, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty
cool.
What
were your thoughts on her getting the win?
I don't know why I didn't think of her when you were asking me what my picks were for the women's Rumble.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be...
I did pick Liv.
You picked Liv.
Yeah, got close.
She was... Yeah. I thought it was going to be Raquel Rodriguez for some reason. I enjoy watching her. I think she's pretty strong, but, yeah. But I didn't mind Rhea getting the win here.
I think it makes sense. She's earned it, because they're doing a lot of stuff with Judgment Day. You know, I think maybe Judgment mm-hmm. Day does need a belt, and it,
yeah,
you know, they might end up with more than one belt too, with stuff happening with the Usos. So, I think it mm-hmm. makes sense if they want to push that as a dominant tag team.
Yeah, originally, before the whole Jay thing happened with him stepping out, I was like, oh man, what I'd love to see, like, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in a tag team match against the Usos going for the belt or something, the belts, you know, I was kind of hoping to see something like that, but I don't know if that's going to happen now, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happens. Yeah. I'm not sure if Solo kind of takes it and steps in and does the
right
second half of that tag team for now or what.
Yeah, we'll see. So those are the Rumble matches. We had some other matches too. We had Alexa Bliss versus Bianca. Anything stand out to you in this match? I mean, I thought it was just kind of not like really. A mediocre,
just a regular
match.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm getting pretty bored with Bianca, and you know that she's not going to lose that match. So
right, yeah, and I mean Alexa still has this whole like storyline going with
bringing that back with Bray Wyatt
and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to make of Alexa Bliss. You know, I don't know if she needs, I think she might need a major kind of overhaul in character, but I, you know, you might disagree with me on that, but.
No, not really. I mean, I think that done right, the stuff that she does with Bray Wyatt is pretty cool. So I think that could give her something interesting to do, you know? So I would like to see what happens with that, but it's also they're taking their time with it, you know.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt. And speaking of Bray Wyatt, we had LA Knight versus Bray Wyatt in a pitch black match. This was a highly sponsored match by, you know, Mountain Dew.
Very highly sponsored.
I actually got myself, I was watching the press conference and I saw Cody Rhodes take a sip of that pitch black Mountain Dew, and I was like, I got to get me one of those. So I was at Walmart last night and I got one. It was just pretty darn good. I mean, there's a lot of sugar
since I've
in
had
it.
One. Yeah.
There's like 75 grams of sugar in that thing. But it was pretty tasty.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure I loved all the branding in that match. Just cause it was so everywhere, including projected on the mat. I think it would have been better if it was on the aprons and on the barriers. I think that would have been okay. Match itself, I think it looked really cool, especially
it was very cool looking. Yeah,
did with his paint, with his face paint and stuff.
Yeah, that was cool.
I think that looked pretty awesome. It was just, it was short, you know, it was a little underwhelming in that respect. And
I feel like the stuff that happened, I'm sorry, but
I think you're gonna say it anyway.
I feel like the stuff that happened after the match was interesting, but I didn't know, like,
I think it's interesting, but I don't. But I also don't think that it quite hit quite right, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it. I don't know what it was. I just don't think it just landed like it could have. However, what I will say about that match and that feud is, I hope it goes a little bit longer, because I think LA Knight, specifically, actually, has been able to really shine, and that's another one of those guys that needs, you know, he needs some TV time, because he's extremely talented. Could be a, you know, pretty reliable guy for them in the near future or now. And right. I think that his promo work and his microphone skills have been just shining through this whole whole feud. So I hope that they continue that for a bit.
Yeah, so that was the Pitch Black match. And then we had the main event. We had Roman Reigns versus Kevin Owens. I thought this was a great match between these two. I think Kevin Owens put up way more of a – I know he's a fighter and everything, and he's great. But he put up even more of a fight than I thought he would. What did you think of the match itself? And then we'll talk
match
about
itself. I thought it was good. I mean, it's about what I expected. You know, Kevin Owens is going to scrap, and then he's obviously not going to win that match. But he's going to be scrappy, and that's what he was. I love Kevin Owens. All the work that he does is so good. He's easily one of their top performers right now. With the ring work and then all the stuff he does outside the ring, he's top of the line for them. I thought the match was really, really good.
Now, the stuff after the match I thought was great with leading up to Sammy, like, you know, and what his decision was going to be. I mean, you almost knew he was going to, like, hit Roman Reigns with that chair, but you weren't sure if he was going to do it. And I liked all that. My only concern with this was that I questioned, did they go a little too far with, like, just the beating of Kevin Owens and kicking him in the face multiple times? And it just, for some reason, it felt to me like it went a little too far and it didn't sit quite right with me. But I didn't know if you or anybody else had that reaction or not. You know,
I gotta tell you, Josh, I loved every second.
You loved every second of that beating.
I think, and see, one of the, I actually watched it back today again. And one of the reasons I love it so much, and this comes back to the acting, is that it's really kind of breaking Sammy out of this almost like cult-like relationship with the Bloodline. And you can see, and a lot of this, 90% of this goes to how well Sami Zayn is acting this stuff out. You can see how conflicted and how mentally just back and forth he is, you know, with when Roman gets in his face, and initially Sammy kind of gets up in his face and then he kind of cowers back. Like, it's all coming back to this stuff. And I think that it had to be that uncomfortable, you know, with the beating of Kevin Owens to get him to that point.
To get him to, like, turn.
Because for a while, I wasn't quite sure. Like, I know this, I knew this was coming. I didn't think that it was coming last night or Saturday night. But you knew this was coming and you just didn't know when. And you didn't quite know if Sammy was still going to just kind of go along with this because this is where he wants to be. Or if he's going to be conflicted, or if they're going to kind of leave it on a cliffhanger, you know, where he's thinking about it, but he didn't do it yet. And then when he goes and does it, and, you know, that crowd was hot for that last night. They were, that was a really good crowd.
It was.
But I think that that all just played out on perfectly for the whole story. So I come away a little bit different from that, but beating specifically, like, I think that it had to be that to really get Sammy to the point where you can even buy into the fact that he is switching and leaving the Bloodline that was so important to him for the last however long.
Yeah, and, you know, it made me feel a little uncomfortable, I'm not going to lie, but I see what you're saying, and it makes me think of one of the things that really impresses me about the WWE that I just thought about while I was watching it. I was like, oh my goodness, like, there is so much that goes into this. Like, the, and so many decisions that get made about in the acting and the from the fireworks, the spectacle of it. But then, like, I also, as I was watching it, I was wondering to myself, and you might know the answer to this, even in like a Royal Rumble match, like that goes on for over an hour, like how much of it is scripted, how much of it is improvised, like on,
well, I mean, like, you know, I feel, yeah,
you know, like,
yeah, I was thinking about that a lot this weekend too, you know, just exactly what they plan before they go in and what's kind of ad-libbed as they're there. And it's kind of amazing. And something like that, that match has to be extremely hard to book and script and, you know, plan out to make it fun to watch, you know, so that it's not dragging on too long and that there's not dead spots. And that, and not only what they're doing with that Rumble match is not just, you know, an hour's worth of entertainment. They're setting up stories for the next 3 months for probably a good, you know, half of that roster that's in that match, you know, so they're doing stuff with, you know, Gunther, and they're doing stuff with Brock and with Lashley and Seth. And so they're setting up these stories within this match. And then that has to branch out to tell more stories, you know?
Yeah. And those will play off later. So it's, it's a very intricate process, I feel. And I mean, of course, wrestling on the surface to somebody can just be like, oh, it's fake. It's, you know, it's this and that, but how like telegraphed it is impressive to me. And like the thought that goes into it, the fact that more injuries don't occur is shocking to me.
A lot of that for WWE goes to how careful they are with training, and some of that goes back to Triple H with the Performance Center and NXT, that type of stuff that he does. You see it some more, like, you, like, I really think you should check out AEW because I think you being a WCW guy, like, it has a lot of that same flavor as WCW did. So I think that you would really dig AEW, and you should probably check it out on Wednesdays.
Yeah, I might but have to check that out.
They end up with a little bit more injuries here and there, and I think it's because they don't have that type of training that WWE does.
Yeah, I can see that. But yeah, for anybody that hasn't checked out the Royal Rumble and you're a wrestling fan or thinking about it, you can watch the replay on Peacock if you have Peacock. So awesome. Anything else to say about the Rumble or WWE or anything?
No, I just had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was a very fun four hours of wrestling.
For sure. I enjoyed it. It's always entertaining. And now we're going to head over to the news for this week, actually. Okay, so first up in the news, we're just going to revisit Avatar 2 as it becomes the number 4 all-time movie worldwide at the box office. So it, this past weekend, it brought in another 15.7 million, at least domestically. So its domestic total is 620.5 million after 7 weeks. It's been at number one for 7 straight weeks, which ties the original Avatar's run. And worldwide, it's at number 4. So James Cameron, you know, according to comingsoon.net here, is now responsible for 3 of the top grossing films of all time: Avatar, Titanic, and Avatar 2. And I'm guessing the other one that's in the top 4 is Endgame. So have you seen this movie yet, Adam? Or are you still waiting on this
one? I haven't yet. I'm going to wait for Disney Plus. Avatar 1 wasn't my favorite thing of all time, so
that is fair enough. And I think you'll enjoy it. I mean, even if you enjoyed the first one just a little bit, I was really impressed by this, and I'm curious to see when it's going to come out on, you know, physical media or streaming, and how long they're going to milk the theatrical run. I'm sure it will be a while until we see this thing released.
Yeah.
So that is Avatar 2, The Way of Water. And next up, we're going to go into the Wizarding World a little bit with Rupert Grint. And he's known for his role as Ron Weasley. And he spoke during an appearance on This Morning last Thursday. And he said he's become quite protective over the character of Ron. But he would definitely be up for playing the character again if the timing ended up being right. He says, I think if the timing was right and everyone was coming back, it was a character that was important to me. We kind of became the same person. I'm protective of him as well. It was my whole childhood. So Adam, would you be interested in seeing the gang come back together for some type of Harry Potter sequel, given that we may have seen the end of the whole Fantastic Beast series? What are your thoughts?
I think, honestly, no. I think leave
it. You don't want to, or it's not going to happen?
I don't want to.
Okay.
I think leaving the series as it is okay. And, you know, beyond something like whatever that place was that they did, I forget what it's called.
Something, I know what you're talking
something
about. Yeah.
Something child.
Cursed child. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of maybe doing something like that. That's the only thing I could think of. But I think leaving that series rest is okay.
Yeah. I think here's what I think. I think given the fact that this is a big franchise, they're about to release a video game.
Yeah.
They obviously want to continue to use this as a, not only a cash cow, but, you know, kind of a source of a franchise for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we could see this, and I think that it could probably be maybe their children, you know, maybe, I don't know if they scrapped the whole cursed child thing or if they adapted, I don't know. I think we will probably see it, but I don't know if I want to either, because, that's, you know, fair. I feel like sometimes you have to leave things
alone. I think
alone
you're probably right on that.
Yeah.
I think what Fantastic Beasts and even this video game coming out are showing is that there's other things that they can do outside of those characters that is interesting. You know, this isn't quite like a Star Wars thing for me. I think that they have shown that there are interesting characters with Newt Scamander, and then there's a lot of hype behind this Hogwarts Legacy game. So, and that's set like 100 years in the past or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's interesting things that they have already done, and I think that they can show that they can do interesting things outside of that.
Yeah, I think outside of this, if there's one thing I'd really like to see, it would actually like I'd like to see the original Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When Tom Riddle was younger, and I
that
think
would be
that
cool.
Would
I mean, you could do something even back with the founding house members, you know, way back in time. I think that would be cool. I mean, there's all kinds of different things they can do. So
right, so we'll see what is coming next in the Wizarding world. For those of you that have Disney Plus, Wakanda Forever is going to be heading to Disney Plus very soon. And it is coming out, let's see here, at 3 a.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. Pacific on Wednesday, February 1st. So that's this Wednesday. If you're listening to the podcast when it debuts, then that might be coming out tomorrow. So this is a movie that... There was a subplot in this movie that I didn't love that I've expressed my opinion on with the underwater culture and everything that reminded me a lot of Avatar 2. And that's why I didn't love it, because I think Avatar 2 did it and did it better. But I am interested in seeing this again. You know, like I do want to revisit this movie and watch it again.
Yeah, cool.
Do you plan on watching that again, Adam?
Yeah, I'll probably watch it at some point. I liked it. I think I actually liked it more than you. I don't know if I'll, you know, I don't know if I'll really revisit it that much. I haven't revisited a lot of Marvel stuff lately, not just that.
Yeah, it's...
I still haven't watched Thor.
Right. Marvel has somewhat fallen off for me recently as well. But
yeah,
that's a discussion for another time, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I think you might be interested in this next one.
This is about
the Super Mario Brothers movie. We got a new clip showing Cat Mario.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a look at this clip here. Okay, so That was a pretty cool clip showcasing Cat Mario in a showdown with Donkey Kong. What are your thoughts on, this movie's coming out April 7th. Are you excited about this? What are
I'm
your feelings?
very excited about this, and I think that they're doing all the right things with this movie too. I think, even this cat suit, which is a 3D world callback, they're bringing in a lot of these things that are familiar to Mario fans, and I think that that is showing a level of detail that is important, and they're taking it seriously. So I think that that's all promising stuff, and I'm very excited for this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I'm definitely excited. It really looks and feels like the video game. So I'm excited for this for sure. And sticking with the world of Nintendo,
I haven't been doing much else this weekend than this.
so you've already been enjoying this one, huh?
Lot.
So GoldenEye 007. A big game on the Nintendo 64 back in the day, back in our time when we were younger, has arrived on the Switch, and it came out January 27th. So Adam, you've already been playing it. Tell us about your experience with
Oh man,
GoldenEye.
I love it. And I actually I like I knew it was coming, so for Christmas I got the N64 Switch controller, the one that connects wirelessly and all that. It's made by Nintendo and it feels like the real thing. Not like a remake or anything. It's a really nice controller, but it feels perfect for this. And that's the only reason why I got that controller was to play this again. And they kind of surprised everyone with I think it was last Wednesday they came out with a little video that said, hey, by the way, this is coming out on Friday. And then they actually released it Thursday night. And so I jumped back in as soon as I saw it was out. And I have been just loving it again,
So I think we need to play this online again,
We
because
do.
I remember the days back when I'd play this
Oh my gosh.
with friends and everything, and we there were times there were different settings you could do in multiplayer, like you could do like slaps only, and you just had to like slap the crap out of each other. I remember our friend Keo always being odd job, and he was just so sneaky, like you couldn't get him
I
with
had a
his.
no odd job rule when we played. So
Yeah, that's a good
that
rule.
was unfair.
But yeah, so this is pretty cool that this is on Switch now. I think we definitely need to play that. I'd like to revisit that.
I've been getting back into it and trying to, get those skills back that have been wasting away for however many years. So it's been a lot of fun to jump back into this game. I'm really glad that they didn't count hours that you spent on games back then, like they do today. Like you can get the game time reports and stuff. I'm glad they didn't do that back then because I would have had thousands of hours into this game.
Oh yeah, no doubt. So Adam, how does one get a hold of this?
This
Is
is
this
Switch Online, and it's with the expansion pack version. So I believe that's like $49.99 a year. That gets you some of the DLC for things like Mario Kart and Animal Crossing. I think a few others are included in that price. And then you get the NES, SNES, Sega Genesis, and N64 Switch Online library of games, which they add
Nice.
to once in a while. So,
So that's like an annual fee of about 50 bucks. Okay. So you can't like there's no like a la carte though. You can't like go in and say, "Oh, I want this one." You got to have it all or nothing at all.
You can do have it all,
That's
nothing
an
none.
O-Town song.
You can, if you want GoldenEye, you have to do the $49 one.
Okay, good to know.
If you only want the NES and SNES games, you can do just the regular Switch Online. I think that's like $20 a year. But that doesn't get you any of the N64 stuff.
Okay, well, thanks for letting us know. I'm gonna have to look into that, and yeah, GoldenEye, awesome stuff. The last piece of news we have this week is about The Last of Us, and season 2 has been greenlit by HBO. So this move comes after the Last of Us series premiere episode has surpassed 22 million viewers domestically. It says here from oncomingsoon.net, no word yet on how many episodes the second season will be, but it will likely adapt the second game in the franchise, The Last of Us Part 2. I've had heard some things from either Neil Druckmann or Craig Mason, like heard them saying on some, maybe the podcast, maybe behind the scenes stuff, maybe online, that it might take more than one season to adapt the second game. So all in all, you know, I don't know how many seasons of this show we'll get, but it's doing well so far, and we're at least going to get two seasons. So that is that. And next up, I am actually going to review The Last of Us Episode 3. And so let's roll it on that one. Okay, so Episode 3 of The Last of Us. This is my review of Long, Long Time. And I'll just start this review with my overall thoughts. Non-spoiler thoughts for anybody who hasn't watched it yet. Then I'll go through the episode and talk about some things that really stood out to me. And then at the end of the review, I'll compare the game to the show, and we'll look at some kind of comparisons, being that I've been a player of the game a few times over now. So my initial thoughts on this episode was it was really well done. I mean, this is a very well done episode of television. There might be some controversy surrounding this episode because of what it gets into, and that it's a departure from the game in a way. You know, it shows more of this relationship between these two characters than was seen in the game. Really, we don't see these two characters, Bill and Frank, interact in the game. But in this episode, there you do, you know, so. And even Craig Mason and Neil Druckmann in the inside the episode said this was probably the biggest departure from the game, but they did it for a good reason. And I agree. I mean, I think this was an excellent story, you know, great on character development, and it ties nicely in with Joel and Ellie in the beginning and the end of the episode. They kind of bookend this episode, where Bill and Frank take up their story, takes up most of the runtime of this episode. So overall, I thought this was great. I thought it was very well done. It's somewhere around a 9 out of 10 for me, maybe a 9.5. But I do want to get into some of the story points here. And we picked this episode up, you know, shortly after episode 2 ends, where of course we saw Tess. And this is where I'm going to get into some spoilers. So I guess this is your spoiler warning. If you haven't watched the episode yet, go back and watch it, then come back and watch this review. So at the end of episode 2, Tess dies. She's bitten, she's infected, and she decides to go out with a bang, provide a distraction for Ellie and Joel to get out of there, and, you know, literally blows up the Capitol building. But here we are now, we're 10 miles west of Boston. Their journey is continuing, and it's just Joel and Ellie now. And they've got a battle with this conflict they have with each other, because they haven't been off to a very good start. Their relationship is not off to a good start. You know, they're not seeing eye to eye here, but, right in the beginning of this episode, Ellie kind of calls out the elephant in the room. She can feel that Joel is angry, maybe blaming her for the loss of Tess, for going on this whole mission. But Ellie calls him out on it, and she's like, listen, do not blame me for something that isn't my fault. This isn't my fault. She calls him out on it. That's one thing I really loved about Ellie's character. You know, she doesn't take any crap. She says it how it is. That's her character in the video game too. So, you know, this is a faithful performance of that. And yeah, so I thought it was a good place to start here. Another thing I really liked about this episode was, you know, they kind of searched this old gas station or convenience store type place for supplies. One of the major aspects of the game is finding supplies along the way. And that's a big part of it. You know, whether it's ammunition or medical supplies, you can craft things, you can craft med kits in the game. it's a really unique and cool part of the game. You know, you can even upgrade your weapons at a tool bench. You know, there's a lot of, and this was really reminiscent of that for me, so I enjoyed that. We also got some more backup or background information on how the cordyceps infection may be spread in the first place. And Joel's theory on it is that it probably mutated, you know, cordyceps probably mutated and got into the food supply, maybe through flour or sugar, something common that a lot of people use. And this is interesting, and we can pretty much confirm this now, because in episode two, when the military officer was talking to the mycologist, she asked where the incident happened with this person that she was examining that got bit. And he said it was in a flour factory. And actually, the world's largest flour mill is in Jakarta, where this whole thing took place. So, you know, we can probably now say with some certainty that that's how this thing got spread. And you know, we don't learn in the game, we don't learn a lot about the background of the virus and or the infection and how it was spread, this fungal infection. So I think it's cool to get back and to go back into some of that through these flashbacks and through characters' dialogue and everything and just see how it spread. So I like that. I enjoyed that. Joel and Ellie in this episode also come to this bone graveyard, and basically Joel tells Ellie that, and you know, she's all about seeing it. She's like, I can handle it. You know, I want to see this. And you know, you have this graveyard basically of bones, and Fedra would actually kill uninfected people if they couldn't fit into the QZ zone, because Joel basically said, well, if they're dead, they can't get infected, you know? So they're trying to do everything they can to stop the spread, which included killing innocent people if they couldn't fit into the quarantine zone. So that was a pretty harsh element of the story. But then a big part of this episode flashes back and takes us through a journey. It takes us through a relationship, really. From 2000, we stop in 2003, we go forward to 2007, 2013, and then to the present, 2023. So I really like this approach they did. They took with telling Bill and Frank's story through all these years. So we see in 2003 that Bill, played by Nick Offerman, who was in Parks and Recreation, he is just outstanding in this role. He really felt like Bill to me from the video game. He's basically this doomsday prepper, and he's got, you know, loads of guns and supplies. He sets traps all around this town. Basically what happened was, you know, this was a place where Fedra cleared out, but he stayed, you know, because he's a prepper. He was in his bunker, and he's got all these supplies. He's ready. He's setting traps all over the town. He grows food for himself. He raided all the town supplies, and he's basically, you know, built this up for himself. And the character of Frank, who's played by Murray Bartlett, who was in The White Lotus season one, and I didn't even recognize him here, but he falls into one of the traps, and through some convincing, Bill basically takes him in. And we get this kind of, you know, here we go. Here's Nick Offerman in the image, if you're watching this on YouTube, as Bill. And, you know, he's basically this doomsday prepper, and it really paid off in this situation. But again, this was the, let's see, here's the shot of Frank, who was just getting out of one of those traps that Bill set. And we get this really beautiful scene of them playing the piano, and Bill plays this song, Linda Ronstadt, Long, Long Time. And it's, you know, it's kind of this really raw, really beautiful rendition. You know, he's no musician or anything, and he admits that, but it just made for a really beautiful scene, I thought, in telling where his character is with basically this, you know, I guess this story of love for him. So that's, you know, something that audiences might fall on one side or the other about, because this is a bit of a detour from the game a little bit, because we actually see this relationship play out over time, where in the video game, it just kind of alludes to the fact that Frank was Bill's partner. But here we get this, you know, story through time. So basically how this connects to Tess and Joel, we get this kind of dinner date scene because Frank is all about with trying to connect with other people, where Bill just doesn't want anybody to know about his town and everything. But they have this dinner date with Tess and Joel. Frank invites them and they want to kind of help each other out, but Bill doesn't like this idea. And Joel warns Bill though, that, you know, basically raiders could, he says, you know, you seem pretty safe from the infected and I don't think Fedra is going to come up here, but you could see raiders come to the town and everything. And he warns them of this and that ends up, you know, what basically happens. As we move to 2013, Frank decides to trade a gun for strawberry seeds and he grows these strawberries and everything. And there's a scene of them eating these fresh strawberries and they're really kind of in this whole, like, almost paradise type situation away from all this. But then it turns from what feels like a paradise into this horrific scene of the raiders attacking and there's all Bill's traps are going off and people are being burned alive. And, it's this whole thing. So I don't know if there's any connection between, you know, Frank reaching out to the outside world and the raiders finding out about where they are, or if that would have happened either way, but it's an interesting thing to think about. And after the whole raid thing happens, you know, Bill is shot in that process and we think that he might die, but, you know, it seems like Frank saved his life because 10 years later, it's 2023. And I have to say they aged a lot in 10 years. The amount they aged in these 10 years is like the amount that Obi-Wan Kenobi aged on Tatooine from Revenge of the Sith to A New Hope. But sadly, Frank has some type of degenerative disease. You know, I thought maybe it was an MS type of thing or a Parkinson's type of thing. But Frank decides that he just wants to spend one more day with Bill. You know, he doesn't want to go on living like this. So he just has this thing in his head of what he wants that last day to be like. He, you know, he wants them to have a dinner together and for them to get married. And at the end of the night, he wants Bill to basically drug his drink so that he dies. But what happens is, you know, Bill kind of reveals to Frank that in the beginning of everything, he didn't like people. He didn't mind seeing the world burn down. And there were times when there was a scene in this episode where he even just sits back and watches the infected, like, get tripped up in his traps and everything. And he's like saying, this never gets old. But it turns out that Frank became his purpose and he wanted to protect Frank and take care of Frank and everything. And so if Frank dies, then Bill essentially dies inside because he loses his purpose. So he decides to take his own life as well, which, you know, is of course another possible point of controversy in this episode. This decision they make to just end their lives. And but at the end of this episode, they leave a letter and a key for Joel that Ellie finds. Because Ellie and Joel in 2023, maybe a few months after Frank and Bill died, Ellie and Joel get to Bill's house and they're searching it and everything. And they get a letter and a key written to Joel and they kind of load up and stock up and everything. And the key, of course, is to a truck. So now they have a vehicle. They have a working vehicle. But the letter was very poignant. And I think the letter is really a key for Joel to, and maybe what he needed to push him to protect Ellie. Cause in the letter, Bill basically says he hated the world, but he found one person worth saving. And I think that's what Joel is going to do here. You know, he basically hates what's going on in the world. He's failed to save his daughter. He failed to save and protect Tess. I mean, even the letter, you know, it talks about all these supplies being for him to protect Tess, but he failed to do that. So now Ellie is the only one. Ellie is the one that who is alive that he can save and protect. And I think this event is really going to push that forward. So Joel and Ellie at the end of the episode basically stock up and they're heading west in the truck. So I want to talk about some of the differences between the game and show and even some similarities, just some comparisons between the game and the show this week. So one of the things that was very similar with the show and the game is the trip wire that Bill set up. You know, he set up these different traps around the town. The trip wire traps are very similar in the game and the show. So that was cool seeing that. The second thing, Ellie finds an arcade game in both the game and the show in this episode. In the game, the arcade game is called The Turning, which I think kind of alludes to like zombie type things. But in this show, it's actually Mortal Kombat 2. That is the arcade game she finds. And another thing here in the game, I mentioned this earlier, we don't actually see Frank and Bill is alive when Joel and Ellie come through Bill's town. But in the show, they're both dead by the time Joel and Ellie get there. So that's you know, again, one of the major departures. And finally, Joel gives Ellie three rules before they leave Bill's in the game and in the show, and they're identical. The three rules are, number one, don't bring up Tess for any reason. Number two, don't tell anyone. He tells Ellie, don't tell anyone about your condition because they won't understand. And if they see that bite, they're basically going to shoot you. And the third rule is do what I say when I say it. So it's cool to like look at these comparisons and see what they kept exactly the same, what they kept similar, and where they deviated and departed from the show. But overall, again, I really thought this episode was very well done on a character development level, on a story level, on, you know, just the moments and the emotions that were created in this episode. Overall, you know, I really enjoyed it for what it is. And I think the show continues to impress. And I can't wait until next week's episode. But what did you guys think of The Last of Us this week? Was there anything that happened that was a deal breaker for you that because it departed too much or for whatever reason, or did you think this show just continued to be stellar and outstanding with this week's episode? And thank you so much, everybody, for tuning into this week's show. And thank you so much, Adam, for joining me this week. It was so great to have you back and just talk about what we've been up to, talk about a little wrestling, talk about the news. So let us know, you know, what are you up to? How can we reach you on social media?
Yeah, social media, probably following me on Twitter is the best place to find what I'm up to. That's twitter.com/thegauze85 or @thegauze85. So finding me there, if you want to check out what I'm doing with the church stuff, that's Facebook. The page is Savannah UM Church PA for Pennsylvania. Website is savannahumchurch.com. And like I said, that's going to get some pretty major overhaul here pretty soon. So I'm excited about that. But that's probably the best place to find me right now.
Great, man. You guys can obviously find this podcast on a variety of places. YouTube is From a Certain Point of View. Be sure to subscribe to the channel. On Facebook, we are From a Certain Point of View. Twitter is @CertainPOVPod, and you can send us an email, CertainPOVPod@gmail.com. Feel free to ask any questions or if you have any ideas for a show or show topics. We are also part of the Red 5 Network, which can be seen on Red5Network.com and @Red5Network on Twitter. So be sure to check that out. Thank you again, everybody, for listening this week. We got a special treat with Adam, and everything we said today was true.
Am I doing it?
Oh, yeah.
All right. From a certain point of view.